there. This is Jo McGarry. Welcome to our podcast. A little different from Radio Mojo, the radio show. The podcasts are meant to be a more private, more intimate, more in-depth look behind the scenes with our guests, and continuing to bring you the best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. If you want to know more about what we do and our work specifically with restaurants and food clients, then you can go to our website, mojomcgarry.com. And this podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or any of the other places where you like to get your podcasts. Enjoy, and thanks for being with us. This edition of our podcast is brought to you by Pieology Pizzeria, now with locations in Kailua, Aina Haina, Pearl Ridge, and University Avenue. Create your own custom pizza with a new selection of specialty crusts, including house-made thin, house-made whole wheat, house-made thick, gluten-free, and my favorite, cauliflower. All of those choices before you even choose the topping. When they say custom-made pizza, they really mean it. Check out Pieology at their existing Hawaii locations and keep listening to hear of the new locations coming soon. For more information on Pieology, opening hours, and locations, simply go to pieology.com. Hey, good morning. Welcome to our Radio Mojo podcast. It's so nice to have you with us this morning, and I hope everything is great wherever you are. I am so excited to be bringing you this conversation this morning because it means we get to be outside. Well, not physically outside, perhaps, because it might be too noisy, but certainly to talk about agriculture and farming and what's so important to life here in Hawaii, sustainability. I'm talking with the president of Kunoa, Bobby Farias. How are you?
Good morning. Very good.
Nice to see you. Did I say your name right?
Absolutely.
Okay, perfect.
Very good. Thanks for having us.
I think, first of all, you know, let's talk a little bit about the ranching, the farming part, because for most people on this tiny island, it's not a part of life that they're connected with. When I first came to Hawaii, I was kind of searching for places that I could go and really be in the wilderness and go and find, you know, off the beaten track. And it's not that common, not that easy. But you grew up in a ranching family, right? You're third generation.
Yeah, you know, we were fortunate enough to always have lots of space around us. We could always kick off the porch and walk out and, you know, get horseback or, you know, ride through the herd or whatever else. And so very fortunate. You know, Hawaii, for all intents and purposes, isn't as developed as people think. Hawaii tends to congregate at the coastline. Mm-hmm. And so that is everybody's perception. But so just still a lot of open space here. Hence the evolution of ranching and how it's getting, I think, more mainstream in Hawaii is the backing out of cane and pineapple, right? So they took up most of the open space land, and it was very inland. But yeah, Hawaii has quite a bit of open space left. Again, most of the development is coastal, and that's where everybody's familiar with.
So growing up in a ranching family, like a sort of dynasty, really, because your grandfather, your father, and then you, was there an expectation that you would continue what they were doing?
You know, not really. Farming and ranching was never really pushed on us. My granddad was cane. He started with Lehui Plantation when he was 10, back when they were still using locomotives to harvest, and then switched into diesel. And so he's always had some cattle, and he wasn't a large-scale rancher, but had a decent-sized herd for family use and friends. Had some hogs. My dad got into it quite a bit. He was president of the Kauai Cattlemen Association for many years and was very active in that. And it stemmed from our dad's background with ranching from my granddad, but also we had a family feed store business for 30-some years that was designed around my brother and I rodeoed quite a bit since we were young and still do. And so it
actually, you're like a champion rodeoer, aren't you? Or what's your proper title?
Well, we've won a little bit here and there. So we rode all events when we did rodeo full time. And But we call ourselves team ropers. You know, that's where we stemmed. Because, you know, the rodeo event was stemmed from ranching, right? It started back in the day when, you know, one rancher told another rancher, hey, I think our guys are better than your guys and we can do it faster. And so that sort of stemmed how rodeo started. But, and so all of our ranching and farming background stemmed from fueling our need to fund our habit, which is rodeo, you know, and So was I forced into it? No, not at all. I don't think my brother got horseback till he was 14. He just thought it was way too busy. We had too much going on. And I actually had backed out of it almost entirely for a while. I moved to the mainland after high school to rodeo full time for a couple of years. And so when I came back, got burnt out on rodeo a little bit, being on the road so much, got back into ranching a little bit. And then got into property management pretty heavily. But that's actually what brought us back to ranching full scale. There were so many properties we built that wanted an agriculture aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what put our big herds back together.
How interesting. So kind of you weren't going to get to escape it. It was going to come back and get you. And now you're really forefront in leading this movement where people are starting to, I think, people are waking up to the fact that we need to be sustainable, but it's always been, the ranching part has always been hard. The cattle part has always been hard to sustain. Can you bring us up to today? Where are we? And how much are you progressing in bringing us local meats and grass-fed beef?
Yeah, so ranching's evolution in Hawaii has been, the big insurgence has been recently because of the land availability, right? Mm-hmm. So ranching's been around, as we all know, it's been a rich part of our history in Hawaii. But I think the resurgence is maybe a little bit like my sort of full circle, is I really thought I was going to get out of it. One was economics, right? I mean, when my wife and I, now married 27 years, we've got, you know, older children. For a while, we thought, you know, there's not any real sustainable income in this business as a standalone company. So all of the big ranchers had a job in town, if you would, right? There was not a lot of people doing it full time. But I think all of that evolution and why I think the resurgence of local beef is that the land availability is one of them, right? So we have prime, high-yielding ground that we can now raise cattle on that wasn't afforded to us, you know, 30 years ago. And I think the consumer, right? I think we live in a consumer-driven market now. Mm-hmm. And the consumers have a very discerning criteria now for where their food comes from, right? They understand that the label is only as good as the words that back it up. And the practices that back that up. So I think in Hawaii, with our small integrated paths, you can find out where your food comes from a little easier. Mm-hmm. And so again, in the consumer-driven aspect, I think people are asking for local produced and ethically sourced on top of that, right? And so I think that really brings local beef to the forefront.
So, and that's the heart of any movement, right? It's demand. And in this case, I think it's educated demand. And it's people who are realizing that, for me, it's almost like a return to how I grew up. Like, we went to a butcher, we knew our butcher, we knew the farmer, we knew the fisherman. I was fortunate because I lived in a fishing coastal area in Scotland. We knew the fishermen. We saw the boats coming in the morning and mm-hmm. We'd walk to the auction, which now I think is kind of a dreamlike way to grow up. But I think that's what people are searching for. They want to go back to putting something on the table for a family meal that they can tell a story about. And that story is, we know where this came from. That's been a long time coming, but it does seem like the time is now, yeah?
You know, the statement, you are what you eat, is true in all aspects, right? And so what you speak of is a relational connection with your food. And that's when food becomes nourishing, when there's purpose behind it, right? And so if you get hung up on the taste and the texture and all of that, that's an aspect, but that's just one aspect, right? Why grandma's cooking was better is because she put a little love in it. And I think that's Kunoa's big hope. If we could be a part of the change, is connecting people with their food, because that's what makes food nourishing, is when it's meaningful. And again, that's what Kunoa hopes to bring to the table, is making the rancher available to the consumer, and then being cognizant of what the consumer wants, because that's who we work for. We, the rancher, mm-hmm. all the way up through the delivering the product, we work for the consumer. And so we want to make sure the consumer is heard and that we hear what the consumer wants.
And just a wee bit, we're going to talk a little bit more about the consumer and how they buy and what they buy, and how we might be able to actually help them make better buying decisions and have their food taste better. So we're going to do that. Before we do that, can you give us an idea of what is the scale? Like, what scale of farming are you on right now? What are the opportunities? Is there room for growth? Is our Hawaii beef industry going to be something that is going to be accessible to all in the very, you know, next few years? Get us up to speed on that.
Yeah, so the scalability, we think we think it's endless. We set lofty goals, right? So the what drove the industry, I think, is the word striving for sustainability. And I heard somebody in one of the talks once talk about, you know, the definition of sustainability is just before not having enough. So that's a little gloomy,
yeah.
Right? And so
it's a desperate state.
It's desperate, right? That's
yeah.
just before death, I guess, sustainability, right? So we're just sustaining. And so we at Kunoa try to always set things for thriving, mm-hmm. right? We
abundance.
Want abundant. And it's okay if we never hit that, right? That's not going to... We don't want perfection to preclude progress. But if we want this to be excellent, then we have to set very, very high, lofty goals and then be willing to take the long journey to that point, but not be afraid of stumbling along the way, right? Because we learn from failure, right? I mean, that's
Absolutely.
That's really what teaches us how to not do that again. And so we do think that we could be, that this is very scalable. I think there's a lot of available land still in Hawaii. I think the customer ask is getting stronger and stronger, which shows stability. And I think we're early in the new pages of agriculture in Hawaii. So I think there's lots of hope for us to guide it into where we want it to be. And so we're very optimistic for the future of local beef.
That sounds so good. And really, when I think about sustainability, I do think about abundance. To me, it's a picture of enough and more than enough, and people very appreciative of what they have. That's what sustainability is to me. It's not that kind of, we have to do it, otherwise we're lost.
Right.
And it just sounds like the picture that you've painted is exactly that, which is wonderful.
We just don't want to do it out of desperation, right?
Yeah.
We want to do it out of... It's the right thing to do, but we as humans do deserve to eat well and be well for it, you know? And so we shouldn't think that, you know, it's only for a certain income bracket or people who can get home early enough to cook a homemade meal. It's for everybody, and it needs to be for everybody. And again, that's what our strive is for that. It's, you know, affordable, accessible to everybody.
And one of the things that I loved hearing recently was that, I mean, Kunoa products are quite available to the public and growing in that. Here at Chef's Zone, for example, I'm a huge fan of your Kunoa bars, which I take to work all the time. And
That's
people
great.
Just, it's they're such good snacks. And of course, your meats are here. But I think very exciting news is you have a contract to supply schools now.
Yes, so we're very proud of that. So one of the first things we worked on when we started was to be able to get to a contract with one of the state facilities, DOE being one of them. We call it the largest restaurant in Hawaii. They do
sure.
over 100,000 plates a day. But it was, again, getting to the kids so that they can start to understand where their food comes from. And I mean, people ask me all the time, what is going to be the success of this program? And I said, it's the consumer, right? This is a consumer-driven system that we're in. And if the consumer understands where their product comes from and why it's a different it makes a difference to make that choice, then I think that's where the success is going to come from, right? They're going to invest in themselves, and that's what's going to make this work. And again, the DOE contract's been great. And it shows partnerships with Hawaii, right? So Hawaii is getting behind a Hawaii industry. And I think that was what made the cane and pineapple industry so successful. Mm-hmm. It was a joint effort. It was a collaborative effort.
And I love the fact that that your meats are in schools, because children, in my mind, have the most discerning palates. Mm-hmm. And you feed children well, and all they want to do is eat really good food. And I think we have, for such a long time, done a great disservice to our children by feeding them absolute rubbish. I mean, we can't even go there. But I think you give children good food, they're going to ask for good food. And so basically you're growing your future right there in the schools. I love it. I absolutely love that. So one of the things I wanted to mention, Bobby, is that a lot of people, when they go shopping for local meat, say they go to a farmer's market or they come here to Chef's Zone and they say, okay, I'm going to buy local beef, and they take it home and they, you know, do whatever, throw it on the grill or whatever. And they say, and I've had people say it to me so many times, go, oh, it's kind of tough though. And you're like, oh, okay, well, what are you doing? How are you cooking it? When we used to take calls all the time to our radio show, we often would have people calling in with, well, I just bought that beef you were talking about and it didn't taste too good to me. It is a problem, isn't it? We do need a little bit of educating in what to buy and how to buy and what to cook.
I think, yes. I think perception of beef is very skewed, right? Because conventional fed beef, you know, wild game, grass fed, right? They're all different product sets. And they all have their great attributes to them, right? But the point is that they're different, right? So if somebody takes a blue ribbon piece of meat from a certain raising model and puts it up against, you know, a wild game catch, if they just use the same cut and expect the same outcome, I mean, that would be no different than, you know, trying to make blueberry cake with strawberries and wondering, well, I used berries on both cakes, right, but they didn't come out the same. So I think that's the first problem, is they're not all the same. The other thing is matching the cut to the particular dish has a lot to do with it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the expectation of what real meat tastes like is a big topic. You always hear it, especially in Hawaii, right? You hear the table behind you ask the server, what's the fish of the day? What's the fresh catch? And they explain what the catch is. And then the customer asks, could I get one that's not so fishy? Mm-hmm. And you sit there thinking, well, you ordered fish,
right,
but you asked for one that's not fishy. You might have should have ordered chicken.
Uh-huh.
But, and so I think that crossroads becomes confusing, right? So, mm-hmm. But again, at Kunoa, you know, we try to make sure that we can backfill that question, right? So, you know, what is the right cut? What is the right, or the preferred preparation style? Or, you know, how should you season the cut? Because at the end of the day, we want it to be a pleasurable experience. That's what eating's about, right? It mm-hmm. should be great. You should love it. You should have enjoyed whatever it is you had to eat. But we do think that there is some method to that end goal being met, right? It's not just overly fatty or a specific raising methodology, right? But it's a full spectrum, right? And so we try to help backfill some of that question.
And you did that, I think, in quite a very committed way. So you decided it was very important that people in Hawaii were educated and knew how to approach beef better for all of us. And so you went in search of someone who could help you tell that story, right?
Absolutely.
And you found, I think, probably one of the best people you could have, somebody with a great background. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you found your butcher?
Yeah, so we think we found one of the best in the industry, right? So Brian, director of products at Kunoa, has a long history of accolades that he can explain better than I. But again, Kunoa tries to fit ourselves in the industry where we can help backfill some of the questions. We don't have all the answers ourselves, but we admit that to ourselves every morning, and then go out in search of finding the answers that our customers have, helping match products to customers, right? I think that's a big thing that we focus on a lot. And I think it's very important, right? We don't want somebody buying an $8 cut when all they needed was a $6 cut, and vice versa, right? If they're going to do a grilling showing, we don't want them to buy something that should have been roasted, right?
Which people do all the time. Yes. I mean, you can see them like standing, staring at things going, oh, I'll just buy this because it's $6.99. And you're like, I wonder what are you making? Brian is actually with us, which I'm very excited about. We're going to say hello. And then what we're going to do is we're going to just have a whole part two to the quinoa story. So stay with us for that. We'll have a whole separate podcast just talking with Brian about butchery. But hello, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Now, you must be sort of living the dream. I mean, from Brooklyn to Hawaii, being, you know, doing what you want to do so well. Yeah, pretty happy guy?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've had a few stops in between, but I couldn't be happier. Every day I say how fortunate I am to be here.
And to be in that, you know, to be outdoors and to be around an industry that is, you know, I think for a lot of people, when the pineapple fields closed, there was that sense, you know, you'd drive up to the North Shore and you would just see all the pineapples gone. Mm-hmm. And there was a sense of loss, I think, yes, for many people, not just family loss, generations who'd worked there, but also a sense of what's coming next. What is it going to look like? What are we going to do here? And I think the fact that your industry has stepped in to take over the land, nothing could have been better. That must feel really good.
Oh, it does. And I wasn't totally aware, as I'm sure a lot of mainlanders aren't aware of the history of what happened here. So I had to do a crash course in that. And the more I dove into it, the more I realized that what is happening in Hawaii and what Kanoa is doing specifically is not only great for Hawaii, but I really believe that it can be a blueprint for regional and local agriculture. Absolutely. Elsewhere. Yeah.
So if you don't mind, we're going to have a fun conversation now about food and cooking and how to cook the best things. And I'm going to direct you in this podcast. At the end of it, we'll put up the link, but you have to go and watch Brian completely butchering a whole pig on a video you did for, I think, Bon Appetit.
Bon Appetit, yeah.
It's just absolutely perfection. I've watched that several times and I do not think you don't miss a slice. It's perfect.
Yeah, it was a really fun video. The whole series was something that came out of a bunch of classes that I did, that the folks from Bon Appetit came. And I said I had apprehensions about being on video, so I told them I would help them and storyboard and pick the people that did it. And they made me promise that if it took off, that I would come and do one. So, of course, I thought it wouldn't. And it did. So then we were at my friend's farm in Pennsylvania, and we shot a really great video that I think is super informative and educational and fun. And
it's captivating, and it's also perfection. And those two things together make you just sit and watch it and go, I want to do that. Yeah. I want to treat my food better. Okay, this is coming up with Brian. Bobby, thank you so much. That was just wonderful to talk to you. I hope we get to talk to you lots over the next few years and just follow how the ranch is going. People are going to find your products more and more in different places. And in our next interview, we're going to tell them how to cook them. Thank you so much for being with us.
That's great. Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being with us. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more information, remember, go check out our website, mojomcgarry.com. We'll see you next time.